Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Find out what day it is. Hold on here. Fred Jackson. What day
20, is it, Fred? 25. 25 of September.
20. Wow. 25th of December.
September.
What did I say?
December.
Yeah, it's not Christmas, is it?
Yeah, we wouldn't be here.
Well, I need to rewind this and start all over again, I guess. I've done lost 2 months of my life there.
That's right. I haven't seen you since the summer.
Well, morning, Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
So, Chris, Fred, and Tim here. Ed's out today, and Ray's not with us. So, we three blind mice will be carrying this show for the next hour and a half. Yeah, we were out last week. By we, I mean my wife and I, Allison, and my sons, and Stephen and Beth McDowell, my friends from the Providence Foundation. We did our tour of our fall tour of Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and then we did Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. So, we were gone a week. Just wonderful folks, 108, something like that, folks from around the country. Most all of them support our ministry. And it was wonderful to spend time with them and talk to folks who believe in what we're doing. And we just had a great time on our tours. And again, we do that every year. So we're already taking registrations for 2024. So we go in June and September. So if you want to check that out, just go to spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com. The dates, the price, the itinerary, everything is there at that website. Yeah, but we had a great time.
Now, when you went to Washington, D.C., did you have proper attire? Or is it wide open there then?
Oh, I know what you're getting at. The senator from Pennsylvania dresses...
Fetterman.
Like a couch potato.
Yeah.
Dresses.
I don't know if Chris is going to go into it. A reporter from the New York Post went to some nice restaurants in D.C., right?
We do have this audio, yes.
In D.C. And he had a hoodie on and shorts.
Like Fetterman.
Fetterman. All right.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him in.
Yeah.
They were... So you're saying that they'll let you on the Senate floor,
yes,
United States Senate floor, dressed like a weekend warrior, but you can't go to a nice restaurant dressed like that in D.C. to prove a point.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and to prove that we're not making it up, I do have the audio here. We're going to point out that we do have a bit of an audio quality issue. It's you can understand it, but there is a lot of background noise because he's basically recording a conversation with a restaurant employee with his phone. But what you're going to hear now is John Levine with the New York Post trying to get into a swanky New York City restaurant wearing a hoodie and sweatshorts, much like John Fetterman wears to his job at the Senate. Clip 7.
Is there a dress code here? So there's no possible way I can even sign at all. Are you open right now?
We are open.
Right, you have space for two.
We don't permit shorts.
Oh, shorts. I see. Your dress code?
Yes.
Would my sweatshirt be okay?
No.
No, you don't have a job. So nothing I'm wearing is okay?
Yeah, it's athletic wear and shorts.
Have you ever allowed anyone with athletic wear and shorts in? There's a United States senator that dresses like this.
Yes, he would not be permitted.
And he would not be permitted either, she said.
All right, fellas. I got to tell you. There's a part of me that... I like to dress like John Fetterman. You know why? Because it's very comfortable.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. However, you got to understand decorum. And to have a United States senator wear a hoodie, and I'm not big on hoodies, but I do like to dress comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And to wear a hoodie and shorts and tennis shoes on the floor of the United States Senate to conduct business should not be allowed.
No.
Because it's a professional place of business, And and even Democrat senators, fellow Democrat senators, are complaining.
Yes,
that that he is allowed to do this. I don't know if that will be reversed or what, but
here's the other thing, Tim. Yeah. If you or I went to visit,
yes,
we could not get in dressed like Senator Fetterman if we wanted to sit in the gallery. We couldn't get in.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no. It's I don't know what they're going to do about that, but it looks terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see what Rand Paul did in response to this?
What did he do?
Okay.
Senator from Kentucky.
Yes, I'll share the link here in a second. But he, in an effort to point out how silly this easing of the dress code is, Rand Paul decided to go to the Senate on the Capitol steps, or on the steps, I should say, wearing a red bathrobe.
Okay, I think that's a meme, Chris. I think that's phony. It's a Photoshop. Because they had several different senators dressed up in crazy casual wear just to make a point. So I think you've been duped there, Chris.
I'm going
to
double check you.
You double check me right there.
If I'm right, can I wear a hoodie and sweatshirt?
Sure.
Tomorrow? Okay.
You know what? The around here at AFA and AFR, after the pandemic, remember the pandemic?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that, COVID?
Breaking news.
You're going to break news here, Chris?
Tim Wildman is correct.
I like to hear that. That sounds good.
Yeah, it was an AI fake, so it got me.
Yeah. I want to check.
I'll see myself out, America.
Okay. they're doing AI fakes to make fun of. Anyway, I told people around here, you know, people started dressing down after COVID, and I said, somebody asked me about our staff here, and I said, it appears to me that anything short of pajamas is accepted. And I'm a casual dresser, but my word, we were walking around in robes and stuff. No, I'm just kidding here. But anyway, I'm all for casual, but no, you're a United States Senator. You sign up for, as I say, a professional entity, body that you're a part of, and to let people just walk around in shorts and tennis shoes and hoodies to conduct business of the country is inappropriate.
Yep.
All right, next story, Chris.
Well, from dress code situations to corruption charges, this was huge news on Friday, and understandably so, because you have a senator facing charges of corruption.
Did you say corruption in Washington, D.C. together?
Yeah, I sure did.
Okay.
I'm going to try to make up for being duped here in a moment.
Okay.
But in a story which you can read on our website, AFN.net, Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey is charged with corruption. He has battled corruption accusations for a number of years now, and those have been either thrown out of court, ruled a mistrial, that kind of stuff. But on Friday, the new set of charges alleged Menendez took repeated actions to benefit Egypt, despite U.S. government concerns over Egypt's human rights record, including ghostwriting a letter to fellow senators encouraging them to lift a hold on $300 million in aid to Egypt, as well as transmitting non-public information to Egyptian officials about military issues. Some of the news reports that came out on Friday, Tim, involved things like him being in possession of gold bars, having nice cars, having a lot of mad money to go out and spend however he likes. So Senator Bob Menendez, it's not looking good for
him. Jersey?
Yes. And he's holding a press conference this hour to announce who knows what, but more on that to come this hour, perhaps.
Well, apparently he's going to announce he's going to run again. He says he's innocent. Now, how many people do you think in America have 13 gold bars, like Fort Knox gold bars, underneath your bed? Plus, he had cash stuffed in envelopes all over his house. He had cash.
Was he raided by the FBI or something?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been kind of out of the loop on this.
Yes. Money stuffed in jackets in the closet.
Uh-huh.
Cash we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Now, it's not only him. His wife also, because his wife is in on this as well.
Now, he is a United States senator from New Jersey.
Yes.
He's a Democrat.
Yes.
You got to give this to him. He does put on a suit and tie when he goes to work. So you got to
give that.
That's a
he's a well-dressed criminal.
He's a well-dressed But so he's being indicted
yes.
for bribery.
bribery.
Basically.
Yes.
Okay.
He did favors, apparently, for interest in
So is he going to step down today, Chris, or not?
I doubt it. He didn't step down the last time. Now, what's interesting here is there have been a lot of calls over Twitter or X for him to step aside. I think even some Democrats have urged him.
Oh, they are. Some of them. He's damaged goods.
Yes.
So, we'll see what happens here. He's not really a high-profile United States senator.
He's chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Okay. I just don't see – he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He's not in the news a lot.
No.
But
he's too busy.
With his hand out? Yes. So you tell me the FBI went into his home and found, like, real gold bars underneath the bed?
13 of them worth $150,000.
Okay. Now, that's almost akin to, you know, the coffee can buried in the backyard. I mean, that's the kind of mentality we're talking about.
Well, and the news coverage, well, the FBI provided, or the Justice Department provided pictures of a jacket worn by Senator Menendez with cash they found stuffed in the pockets around the house. I mean, this is bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
I have shared a link to what we're discussing here with Senator Menendez on our Facebook page for people to read.
Okay. Well, so he's going to have a press conference to try to do cleanup on aisle 5.
According to the AP, he and his wife, who's also accused, they've not been married very long. They got married in 2020. They began dating in 2018, and they got engaged in 2019 after meeting at an IHOP in Union City, New Jersey, which is described as a frequent haunt of his.
I listen. A lot of people met at IHOPs. You know.
You want to talk international business?
How many U.S. senator going to IHOP to meet a lady? Okay. I think next we'll find out what he says today about the gold bars and the cash Fred Stess stuffed in pockets. Go ahead.
Let's mention this because I've got some audio here. Governor Newsom.
The California governor?
Yes. California Governor Newsom.
Real cream.
Yeah.
Yes. Real cream Gavin.
He had a lot of people talking on social media on Friday, fueling speculation that he may decide to run for a higher office. And I say that because late on a Friday night, Gavin Newsom, the California governor, vetoed controversial legegislation known as AB 957, which would have required judges to remove custody of children from parents who do not affirm a child's gender or identity or gender expression. So a lot of people who don't normally apply to Gavin Newsom were all of a sudden, you know, way to go, Gavin, that kind of thing. It's a great decision. But as Fred can point out here, he did something very positive that many people would like, and then he went down and became his usual Gavin Newsom self on Saturday.
Let me tell you the backdrop here that most people have heard having to do with the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. And the reason, of course, California is the biggest state in the union, so they get a lot of attention.
It's basically a country.
Whatever they do. I think California, at least one time, and this may not be true anymore, like the 10th. Had the 10th largest economy in the world.
It's still up there.
By itself. So, anyway, however, a lot of people think he is going to replace Joe Biden as the presidential nominee on the Democrat side. Okay, so that's why more attention is being paid to him, because Biden clearly has serious problems in a myriad of ways politically and personally and health-wise. So a lot of people are looking at Newsom as maybe the, quote, savior for the Democrat Party. So what he did right here, he did one good thing, and then he did a couple of terrible things in terms of legislation. He's the governor. He vetoed a bill that was basically saying you could take away children from their homes if the parents didn't affirm their, quote, gender identity. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Of course, I think that would have been struck down as unconstitutional. But nonetheless, he did that. That was so far whacked left that even Gavin Newsom said it's not. I'm not going to do this.
Right
now, what did he do? But he signed two subsequent bills
on Saturday morning.
Go ahead.
Right.
All right. One of those, and this is the way the AP reads this story. One of those sets timelines for required cultural competency training for public school teachers and staff. All right. While another creates an advisory task force to determine the alleged needs of LGBTQ students. So what I read from that, and I haven't read the complete legislation there in California, what I read from that basically is that teachers are going to have to be required to take propaganda teaching,
right,
pro-LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. It's not only teachers, but school staff. The second one will require families to show that they can and are willing to comply with the decisions of a foster child in foster care, regardless as it pertains to their sexual orientation or gender identity. In other words, if you have a foster child, you, the parent of that foster child, are going to have to be willing to accept if that child says, it's a boy, I feel like a girl today, or they come out as a homosexual, you will not be able to debate that or try to counsel them not to do that.
That's the law he signed.
That's what he signed, yes.
I tell you what, California is just, I don't see how much longer people who are freedom-loving or even are Christians are going to be able to stay there. Mm-hmm. Well, millions have moved out in the, in the last few years. Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're a Christian teacher, for example, according to this law, you're going to have to undergo propaganda training, pro-LGBT.
You're talking about public schools or private, too?
Public schools.
Public schools, okay.
Yeah. But also, if you happen to be a foster parent.
Right, right.
You cannot debate now whether your child comes home and says, you know, it's a male, I want to be, I'm identifying as a female. You as a foster parent could lose that child if you debate that or try to get counseling.
It's hard enough to get foster parenting now.
Right. There is a case in Massachusetts. Beckett, the Beckett Law Firm is involved in this one, but Beckett is representing a couple of people in the Boston area that are Catholic and they want to foster. They can't have children themselves. And they claim that they were denied the ability to foster kids because they don't. Mm. They believe in traditional marriage, man, woman, gender, that kind of stuff. Biblical beliefs that we all hold near and dear. And they're going to court to fight Massachusetts over that. So that could very well play into what California is looking to do here.
You think Newsom will be the guy on the Democrat side, Fred, when this is all said and done?
The way things are going, there's a poll, and maybe we'll get to it later. There's a Washington Post ABC poll that's out there from the weekend that says former President Trump, if the election was held today, would beat Biden by 10 points.
Now that's a national poll.
That's a national poll. But it is following a trend right now.
Yeah.
We've talked about these polls over the last month and a half, 2 months or so. But more and more Democrats are having strong reservations about having Biden on the top of the ticket.
They don't want him.
No. That's the bottom line. So who are they going to get? That's your question?
And they don't want Harris, VP.
Oh, no.
They don't want her. She wouldn't be any better.
No.
So in terms of – so there, I think there's some big discussions going on maybe behind the scenes in the Democrat Party about who could be the – well, they – you know, you got RFK Jr. there.
Mm-hmm.
He's running against Biden. Of course, he's polling – way down, way behind.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an opponent, mm-hmm, right, to Biden right now, but it's not competitive. But I think the Democrat Party, the big money and the big leaders and the big wigs, they understand that Biden is the weakest candidate.
Yes.
They could have, and they've got to have somebody else. And it seemed to me, the logical choices would be Gavin Newsom from California, the governor. I say logical choice. He's so far left. I don't know if he's electable. But now Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, she's a lefty too.
Far left.
Shut down governor.
Mm-hmm.
But she was reelected.
Mm-hmm.
in Michigan.
As was he, because he got a recall.
Yeah, was he. So, was, you know, Michigan and Michigan's not, Michigan's more split than California is in terms of conservative liberal. But I don't even call them liberals anymore. They're just far left wackos. Yeah. So, but Whitmer seems to me, or Newsom would be a likely candidates to replace Biden should he drop out.
I find it very interesting. The Democrats have chosen Newsom to be at the Republican debate at the Reagan Library. Mm-hmm. He's going to be there doing counter interviews outside, giving the Democrat point of view outside the debate there at the Reagan Library on Wednesday.
Well, that's kind of telling, don't you think?
Yeah.
Who's chosen him? Did Biden? The White House?
I would assume the DNC, Democratic National Committee, chose him. Yeah.
They want to get him out there for the very reasons we're talking about, in case he's the nominee, right?
The Hill is reporting that it's the Biden campaign sending Newsom.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. We got about 3 or 4 minutes before the break. Don't you think that Jill Biden, the first lady, will tell her husband he can't run again?
Well, you're asking me from a compassionate point of view.
Yeah.
I would say, given the mental state, I'm Jill Biden, the mental state that I'm seeing in my husband.
You're Jill Biden.
If I'm Jill Biden looking at what's happening to my husband, there were several incidents last week. One of them, he told the same story twice within a few minutes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, he also told the, he was speaking to the Black caucus.
No. He was speaking to the Hispanic caucus.
Okay, excuse me. Yeah. He was speaking to the Hispanic caucus, and he referred to them as the Black caucus, right?
He did, yes.
So he got confused there. It's daily. It's daily, and it's out in the open. I'm just saying, seems to me any wife of somebody in this condition would say to her husband, "Hey, honey, you can't. We're not up to this. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to announce we're stepping down after one term, and you know, we can go to our beach house in Delaware or
Which
whatever.
One?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? Which one? There's two people I think on planet Earth that could tell him, "Hey, we need to call it a day and go home." One is Hunter and one is the First Lady. I don't know that Hunter is going to talk him into it, because if you believe what Republicans say, he needs dad in office to continue making money for the family. And Jill Biden seemingly enjoys being First Lady.
Well, most First Ladies do. Yes. But I mean, you got to, at some point, it's elder abuse, I guess you could say. It seemed to me a wife of somebody in his condition would tell him straight up, "You can't run again." Now, also people in his condition, mm-hmm, I use it in quotations, whatever it is, I don't know if it's medically diagnosed, would it be medically diagnosed as dementia, but it's surely looking like that. Somebody in that state, they're ornery,
mm-hmm,
a lot of times, mm-hmm, and they're belligerent. Mm-hmm. You tell them, "You know, honey, you're not, or sir, we think it's best that you step down and, you know, for your sake and for the sake of the party."
Yes.
And he says, "No, I'm not. I'm doing good. People love me. I'm doing a great job. Bidenomics."
Uh-huh.
So how do you, if he is in that state of mind, there's no mechanism, doesn't seem to me, short of what is it that they refer to, the 25th Amendment, or what is it? Is it the 14th? My mind's...
25th, I think.
Yeah. You know, the one where you go in and say he's mentally incapable of holding the office.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that 25th? Isn't it 25th Amendment?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, short of that, mm-hmm, which I don't think the Democrats are going to do, then I don't know. I don't know anybody can do anything to force him to withdraw his name as a Democrat leader. We'll be back. I'm telling you.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Over in Workingham, England, there's a fellow by the name of John Baldwin. Mr. Baldwin was busy, it seems, doing nothing. He was so busy doing nothing that he got himself into trouble with the law. He was so busy doing nothing that he did not have time to pick up the mail that was piling up at his front door. Among the letters that Baldwin did not open were demands for tax payments. Baldwin was taken to court, freed on bail pending a tax probe, and allowed to return to his normal pursuits. When asked what he had accomplished in the 30 years he had devoted to restful research, Baldwin replied, "Nothing. That's what I set out to accomplish." Well, you know, there are a lot of folks in this old world who, although they don't go quite to the extreme that Mr. Baldwin does, seem to agree with him on this idea of doing nothing. Or if they do anything, it's for themselves only. And in a real sense, one could say that what Mr. Baldwin does, he does for himself only. It's a real shame that Mr. Baldwin and countless others who do nothing for anyone else and very little for themselves could not come under the influence of the master workman of the world. Their lives would all be a little different if he was allowed to motivate them instead of them attempting to motivate themselves. There is one thing that everyone can be thankful for, and that is that the Creator has not quit his job. Consider what the result would be if he should decide that he'd like to become busy doing nothing. You're talking about a mess? There would be a dilly. But he hasn't decided to quit, and he never will. The Galilean spoke to some who listened one day in the town of his trial, and he said, "My father is working still, and I'm working." If we are hunting for something to be thankful for, there it is. It's a pity that Mr. Baldwin could not come under the influence of the great carpenter. The carpenter would give him some meaningful work to do and would make him happy doing something constructive in this world instead of doing nothing. Some people interested in the subject of doing the work of the Creator asked the carpenter one day, "What must we do to be doing the works of God?" And he answered them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent. Witness the work of those who have believed in him all over the world." Just before the terrible death, this man of all men spoke, "I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work which you gave me to do." The one who gave him work to do gives each of us a job also. And to be sure, it's not a job of doing nothing. It would be a wonderful world if we could say the same thing he said before our death also. If you have something to do, get busy. If not, find something.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
When Natalia found out she was pregnant, her initial reaction was fear and anger. She didn't think she could go through with her pregnancy and had decided on abortion. By the grace of God, her partner's family was praying, and she was led to a preborn network center. Once she saw her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, she knew that God wanted her to have her baby, and he would carry her through. Natalia chose life and has received ongoing love and support from Preborn. Because of your generous support, Preborn writes 200 stories just like these every day. $28 can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection and doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers in crisis choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation goes towards saving babies.
For we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. 2 Corinthians 5:1.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hey, Charles and Sharon McCord stopped in to see us from, they live in Fort Smith, Arkansas. They've been down on vacation in Florida and going home and came through Tupelo and stopped to see us and gave them some popcorn, some of our holy popcorn here, which makes life a lot better.
Sanctified popcorn.
Sanctified popcorn. Ooh. Got the famous popcorn machine that I utilize daily here.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of nice. We got cheddar. We got all kind of.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. Whatever you call them. All right. So anyway, we want to thank them for stopping by. And if you want to visit us here in Tupelo, Mississippi, you're traveling and you have an opportunity to stop by. All you need to do is let us know. You're coming a day or so in advance. That'd be wonderful, and we can schedule you a tour. You can come into our studios. You can have some of our popcorn.
Yes.
All right. So we invite you to stop by and see us. We always love meeting our listeners. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, and Chris. Hey, we're joined in the studio. One of my good friends, Dr. Dean Register, who's in town from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Brother Dean serves what church? You said Crosspoint, right?
Crosspoint Community Church, Hattiesburg.
Hattiesburg. Right. How long you been there?
Going on 17 years.
Now, is that you got a new book out we're going to talk about in just a minute. Is that a Southern Baptist church or what is that?
It is Southern Baptist affiliated, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, so how many deacons meetings have you been in your career?
You know, when we planted the church, we said we're going to let deacons be New Testament deacons.
Okay.
They're not a board that runs the church. They're a body that serves the church.
Okay.
And that's
so you're structured just a little differently than
yes,
a lot of Baptist churches.
Yes, very much differently.
So you have elders or what?
In a similar way, we have what we call a ministry advisory board.
And, I mean, who harasses the pastor? That's what I'm getting at here.
Everybody still has. I mean, it's open season with pastors all the time.
But you've been serving there for how many years?
17 years almost.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah. When did you start? Were you always been a pastor, or were you a layman before?
I was born in Florida, grew up in Georgia.
Okay.
I call Mississippi home.
Okay.
We have lived in Mississippi since 1985.
I
pastored 8 years at First Baptist Gulfport, 14 years at Temple in Hattiesburg, and then nearly 17 now.
Well,
here at Crosspoint.
Amen. Well, now you've got a new book out.
Yes.
How many books have you written?
Well, I wrote a little commentary for Romans some years ago, and then, you know, as pastors, I don't know how pastors have time to write anyway, and I'm a plodder, so I write slowly, but I'd been asked so many times to get something out there for pastors and believers, and I guess I got old and I decided I'd do it, you know, and so I wrote Holy Grit.
But you wrote Romans.
Mm-hmm. It's a commentary on Romans, just a little commentary.
I always thought Paul did that, but I didn't realize that you were that old. You wrote a commentary.
I did.
But now, Holy Grit, you were talking to our staff this morning in devotion. We're talking to Pastor Dean Register from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And Holy Grit, that's the title of your new book, The Will to Preserve. You were talking to our staff this morning in devotion. That's not a theological out there. That's everyday living.
It's everyday living. Yes, exactly. And what I did is I defined Holy Grit as working out the salvation that God works in us. Mm-hmm. Because it's not some kind of meritorious, like I'm gonna persuade God to save me or trying to earn that. It's that once we're saved, we're obligated to live it out because He's worthy. He's worthy of us living in a way for Him. And as you guys know, we live in a quitting culture. If it gets hard, let's just quit. And so I said, well, what characters in the Bible really started to personify persevering, Holy Grit? And I looked at several of those, and that's what.
Who's number one?
Ooh.
Or maybe you didn't categorize them like that.
Give
us top three.
Yeah, I started chronologically.
Okay.
Began with Abraham. Abraham, you know, that guy had to wait a long time. Mm-hmm. If the Lord told me, hey, you're going to have a child, and I had to wait that long, I would have given up. Abraham waited.
What was he waiting on?
He was waiting on Isaac. And, you know, the interesting thing, glad you asked that, because there's a passage in Genesis in which Abraham says, Ishmael comes along, and then he says, well, why don't we just let Ishmael be the promised one? And I've discovered that if we're not careful, we will settle for the Ishmaels of our own making rather than wait for the Isaac of God's promise.
Mm-hmm.
And so Abraham, I started with Abraham, walked him through a lot of struggles. And you know, the thing about Abraham is he had to wait. And waiting, I'm not good at waiting. Some people are great at it. I'm just not. I bounce my leg. I twiddle. It never really developed.
You got pastor's ADD.
Amen. It never really developed my DNA, I don't think. But boy, waiting will gnaw at your faith. It will just bleed you almost. And so I love the fact that Abraham, to his credit, he did wait and wait and wait. And then I looked at Joseph. When you think about Joseph in the book of Genesis, this guy had to forgive a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get brothers that really want you to die, and then they sell him, and he finally finds a job. Potiphar hires him. You can take care of my estate. And then Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him, and then when he flees from her, she said, well, he did it, and he gets thrown in prison again. So this guy has to find a way to forgive, and we all do at some point. We may not have been abused, but we've all been hurt. We have to find a way to forgive. And so what I did is I walked through that. And Tim, what I learned in my research is a lot of people say, well, forgiving is forgetting. If you remember, you didn't forgive. That's not true. If we were to ask some people who had been badly harmed, had a loved one that was murdered, or the Amish children that were killed some years ago, mm-hmm. their parents can never forget that. But what they did is they showed the world that they could forgive. And I've said, forgiving is not so much about forgetting as it is remembering to let God's grace replace the hurt so that we're void of retaliation.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you look through the scriptures, and you cited Abraham, you cited Joseph, right? As I call them characters, they were real people who had to endure or persevere or have, as you say, holy grit. That only shows us all through the scripture the people that were even closest to God were not immune, or what word am I looking for? Or they couldn't escape real life.
No, they couldn't. They were not exempt from it.
Right.
And when I get into Caleb, I love Caleb. If I was probably dealing with great heroes, I would have included him in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, because he seemed to be a much more noble character than Samson was. But I know the list is not exhaustive, it's more illustrative. But Caleb, he does everything right. I mean, and he tells the people, hey, we can do this. God's in it. I know we can do this. And they rebel, and guess what happens? Caleb has to suffer with the rest of them for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
No, as you said, nobody's exempt. We don't get a free pass. And so I raise the question, how do you sustain a resilient faith? I mean, if I'd been Caleb, I'd said, you knuckleheads, y'all disobeyed the Lord, and I have to suffer with you.
Mm.
But boy, and then when he finally gets, into the promised land, he says to Joshua, I want that hill country. That's where the giants are, and I want to tackle the giants. And I wrote that, we're all going to get old. Some are denied the privilege, but I want to be like a Caleb. There's the hill country. God, let me tackle some big things. Let me do some hard stuff. And I may have to gum my food. I may have to use my walker. I may have to wear Depends. But I want to go full bore for Jesus until he calls me home. And so Caleb was a great example.
I'd rather avoid the Depends, though. if at all possible. I don't know if I needed that spiritual image there. But talking to Pastor Dean Register, the book he's got out is excellent. I haven't finished it, but I know it's called Holy Grit, The Will to Preserve. And this is everyday Down in the Trenches Christian Living right here. And Dean has a lifetime of experience in his own life and dealing with folks in his churches that he's had to help through life's questions. And how can people get a copy of the book?
They can either contact the publisher, which is Westbow, Division of Thomas Nelson Zondervan. But as you guys know, it's easier through Amazon.
Sure,
they're quicker and they're faster.
Yeah,
so they can just
so all the online book folks have it. Holy Grit,
The Will to Persevere,
and Dean Register, Register. Now you got your Bible open there in front of us. So what are you looking at?
Well, I was just thinking about Elijah in the Old Testament, how he had to persevere. And, you know, Elijah's a titan of the faith.
Yeah.
He just strides across the Old Testament like a giant. And he challenges Ahab, and he says, we're going to have a showdown on Mount Carmel. And when the showdown occurs, of course, the Baal prophets are routed, and then Jezebel says, you know, I want his head. And what does he do? He runs. And I don't like to see my heroes run, but I'm so glad that Elijah, the whole description of him is there, because I've run sometimes. I've said, Lord, I can't face that. I'm going to run away.
Put that microphone up there closer to you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're fading in and out.
Yeah, and I've said, I'm going to run, and I have, but God calls us to stay. Anyway, with Elijah, what does he do? He runs all the way down to Mount Horeb, and he says, you know, Lord, I'm done. I'm finished. And what I did in Elijah, I tackled the subject of depression. For a lot of Christians on the backside of COVID, they battled depression. A lot of them just gave up. They quit on their job. They quit on their marriage. They quit on their dreams. They quit on their church. They quit on the Lord. And I know quitting can be right for the right reason, but it's always wrong to quit on God. But here's Elijah, and
amen.
I'm done. I'm in this cave, and God, you just need to get somebody else. But God calls him, and God says, you don't need to resign. You just need to re-sign.
Amen.
So he sends him back out.
Is his mic cutting in and out? Adam, could you get over here and fix that? Because there we go. There we go. All right, I got to ask you.
Yes.
You've been a pastor for how long?
Ooh, let me see. When was the Mayflower? four and a half decades, I guess.
How many weddings have you done?
Oh, man, I did 500 at least. And well,
tell us about number 247.
That was the one I forgot.
All right, you got to tell me, because I love asking pastors these questions. At funeral or weddings or whatever, what's a funny memory of a wedding that you have?
I've had them pass out.
What now?
Yeah. I've had bridesmaids pass out, had a little groomsman pass out. The one I wrote about, it was a failure. I forgot, sort of. There was a couple that I dearly loved. I knew them, young couple. They're a great couple to this day. Wanted me to do their wedding. I said, great. We lined it up. The wedding coordinator said, I know what you're going to tell them. You're going to encourage them to live large for Jesus, and this is what you're going to say.
Right.
And I said, okay, great. And she said, you don't need to be here for the rehearsal. I said, I love that. Rehearsals are boring. I love that. So I went home. My wife and I had a great evening that Friday night. Next day, the wedding was at 2. She says, I need some azaleas and laurel petalums planted.
Your wife's saying this?
That. Yeah. And I go out in the yard, and I dig the holes, plant all that. We have lunch. I said, I need to mow the grass. So I'm back out in the yard, and at 10 till 2, she comes in.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
She says, have you forgotten a wedding? I said, I just remembered.
It's 10 till 2, and the wedding starts at 2?
2, exactly. And I'm, with green lights, I'm at least 20 minutes from church. So I told the wedding coordinator, tell her to play the pianist and to tell the pianist to play everything she knows. You know, if she has to go over
this
the box.
Before cell phones.
This is before cell phones. That's right.
Oh, so they did. Wow.
Yes.
So you didn't even. So,
no. So I jumped in the shower. I was dirty and filthy. Jumped in the shower. Had my socks, my boxer briefs, and my T-shirt. And Sharon said, I'll drive. You dress in the car. So we go down the highway and we stop at a traffic light, and this old guy in a truck looks over at me like with disgust. Not what you think, buddy. And so,
did you make it?
I was.
Two wheels?
I was late. Two wheels sliding in. I ran past an usher, and I saw the groom, and thankfully he wasn't holding a gun or anything. And he embraced me. He said, "Oh, well, Pastor Dean, we thought you'd been in a wreck. We're so glad to see you."
Okay.
I'm not sure the bride's mother was glad to see me, though.
Ed's by vocation, was a by vocation. Ed Battagliano, yes. He's not here today, but he was a by vocational pastor for many years. And I think he told me one time he drew a blank on the name.
Ooh.
Standing up there, he had known these folks, ooh, but he drew a and that happens to all of us pretty much.
It does.
But he said that was terrifying.
I baptized the guy in the wrong name, but I guess that's okay.
did you really?
Yeah.
In front of the whole church?
Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
A little guy was about 12, and his granddad was a pastor.
Yeah.
And I knew his granddad. baptized. You know, his name was Bob, and baptized in the name of Ed. So.
Did it take?
I think it took.
I really do. Oh, my goodness gracious. they got the one moment on video of their grandson getting baptized, and the pastor calls him the wrong name. Anyway, you got. I wanted to thank you for coming by and being with us. And again, the book is Holy Grit, The Will to Preserve, by Dean Register, our guest. He's in town with us. We're happy to have him. And you can get a copy of the book anywhere online, folks. Holy Grit, The Will to Preserve. And it has stories about all those biblical characters you mentioned and others.
Yes.
As you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dean.
Love being with you. I fully believe that the American Family Radio is the premier voice for biblical Christianity in our nation. You guys keep going. I love all of you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
And may the Lord bless your church there. And your writing efforts. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, and Chris. Chris, what is your next story?
I always hate having to go back to news when we have fun, lighthearted discussions, because then I got to become Captain Doom and Gloom again and ruin the rest of the show with 9 minutes to spare. But nonetheless, one of the things that we have long talked about in this program is the fact that government thinks it knows better than parents and people in communities when it comes to institutions like schools, which, by the way, parents and community members are paying for through their tax dollars. And I bring all this up because Education Secretary Miguel Cardona is in the news today, and understandably so for what I'm about to play. Mr. Cardona doesn't like that parents and community members are fighting things like pro-transgender policies in schools. Secretary Cardona told an interviewer that people act like they know what's best for kids. And Cardona says, it didn't always used to be this way. I'm going to play some audio here. Adam, we're looking at clip 12.
There was civility. We could disagree. We could have healthy conversations around what's best for kids. I respect differences of opinion. I don't have too much respect for people that are misbehaving in public and then acting as if they know what's right for kids.
Now, if you guys, listeners, didn't understand what he just said there, the head of the Education Department, a taxpayer-funded institution, said that there are parents and community members acting as if they know what's right for kids. Fred, you've heard a lot of incredulous things in your time in broadcasting. This has to be in the top 10.
Oh, absolutely. And this appears to be a growing agenda amongst Democrats. We talked about California a few moments ago. But I keep going back to this statement from President Biden just a few weeks ago when he said, these are our children. And don't miss that, folks. What he was really talking about there is that these children need to belong to the state.
Right.
That's what's going on here. You know, it brings up another story, and maybe we're going to deal with it in a few minutes. But anyway, it brings up this my memory of the German family that was homeschooling in Germany, and the state came along and said, we want your children because the state want to raise your children with state secular values.
Right.
In other words, we think teaching them Christian values is not good for the state of Germany. Now, of course, this family had to escape Germany and came to America. But Chris, there's a development on this German family we're talking about that has lived here in the United States, I think, for 15 years now.
Yes, we have this story on our website, AFN.net. I'll share the link here in a second. And our headline from a Parish Offered article is German family that fled to the U.S. ordered to return. So that lays out all the information that you just shared there. But Fred, go ahead and tell everybody what the update is.
Well, the update is this, folks. They have fought in the court to stay in this country. This is a beautiful family. They have fought to stay in this country because they know if they go back to Germany, they will lose their children. The Obama administration fought this. All right. This has been going on now for 15 years. They have just gotten notice that the Biden administration is not going to allow them to stay in this country. Now, they are, I believe, continuing to fight this. But the Biden administration that is allowing millions of people to cross our southern border and to stay. We had the story last week where the Biden administration is willing to give over 450,000 people from Venezuela who entered our country illegally work permits to stay.
Right.
But this family that is facing persecution, the loss of their children if they go back to Germany, this Biden administration wants to kick them out.
Yeah, and let's go back middle of last week when Attorney General Merrick Garland got up there and was hammered by Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee about persecution of people of faith. Garland got upset with one of them. How dare you, with all that my family came here and experienced and how we got here in our story, you can't accuse me of this and that. Here they are literally doing the same exact thing that he took great exception to getting questions about. It's a really troubling story. Homeschool Legal Defense Association has been very outspoken on the issue of the German family. I believe also Alliance Defending Freedom International has been involved somehow, some way, perhaps even just writing briefs here. So there are people that we know and work with that are active and trying to help this family here. And, you know, I mention this oftentimes in the show. There might be a group of people in another state, or maybe it's a different place of worship. Like, you might be a Presbyterian, but there's a Catholic couple in the news for something. You need to be concerned about this, because what's happening to those people will eventually come to your neighborhood. It's not a matter of if anymore, it's when.
Hey, I want to change the story because I wanted to hit this before we have to take a break.
Okay.
The mayor of Dallas,
yes.
Texas. The mayor of Dallas, Texas.
Changing parties.
Yeah. He's been a Democrat, and now he's changing to a Republican, right?
He did, yeah. Mm-hmm. He said last week in an op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal, quote, "Today I am changing my party affiliation. Next spring I will be voting in the Republican primary." I'll share that link here in just a minute.
Yeah, and he's an African-American fella, which, you know, almost all African-American mayors are Democrats. And he was, but now he's decided to switch parties. Does he say why exactly, Fred?
Yeah, he says this is hardly a red wave. But it is clear that the nation and its cities have reached a time of choosing, and the overwhelming majority of Americans who call our cities home deserve to have real choices, not progressive echo chambers at City Hall. He's talking about the crime waves that are being experienced in these cities, and he says enough is enough. We have to start representing the people. We have to start protecting our people from these progressive policies. And what he's talking about, these no bail releases. Speaking of that, I got to mention, there's a story out of New York this morning. You know, there's over 100,000 illegals have arrived up there. Two of them were charged on the weekend with assault in one of these hotels where they've been putting them up. They get arrested, and guess what? They're back out on the street within minutes. It's just,
yeah,
it's
listen.
Crazy.
The people in these cities like San Francisco, Chicago, Philadelphia, and, of course, New York City, the people are voting their own destruction.
Yes.
They are voting. They continue to vote for liberal Democrats. The liberal Democrats, like these DAs, the district attorneys, who don't believe in punishment for crime, they're turning these criminals out like a turnstile violent criminals back onto the streets. Mm-hmm. And so they're just doing it. They're just repeating crime over and over again. In Minneapolis, I read last week, these criminals, these violent criminals now are following people home into the suburbs.
Yes.
And they're attacking them in their driveways in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was a story out of Minneapolis. And that's going on. San Francisco is just a horrible place now. Businesses are leaving all over the place. So, but until these people stop voting for their own demise, it's hard to have sympathy for them, quite frankly. Right. We'll be back momentarily.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.